Welcome to Pickle Me This, the officially unofficial podcast for Rick and Morty on Cartoon Network's Adult Swim. I'm your host, Jim.
And I'm Aaron.
You can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Today we're covering Season 2, Episode 5, Get Swifty. Here's Aaron with the recap.
An advanced alien race teleports Earth into a dimension where all of its inhabitants will be challenged to a universal musical talent show. Unless the Earth can show these aliens what they've got, the planet will be destroyed. Unfortunately, all of Earth's musicians are killed in a freak Grammys accident, leaving Rick and Morty to save the day, armed with nothing but stock beats and improvised lyrics. Meanwhile, the bizarre occurrences around the aliens' unsettling appearance has the Smiths' neighborhood rethinking their relationship with God. Principal Vagina founds the new cult of headism with him as the head spokesperson, in which the faithful are rewarded with positions and prestige, and the faithless are headward, free now to rise. All right, Jim, what'd you think? Getting swifty.
I got a thing that I need the listeners to do. I need to get them... You need to take your podcast app right now and get your finger over the unsubscribe button.
Are you about to take a shit on the floor?
I am. I'm about to go into your living room and shit all over it. I think this is the weakest A plot of the season.
Huh.
I know this is classic Rick and Morty. Like, even I come away from this episode, you know, sort of half humming Get Swifty to myself.
Right.
But I don't think there's much there.
It's a jam. What more does it need to be?
I don't know, man. This is Rick and Morty. I expect the A plot, and maybe it's a valid question to ask if this is even the A plot, because we were talking about this before the podcast, and I think I came down on this, on the Rick and Morty adventure in this episode being the B plot for Summer, Beth, and Jerry's A plot.
Yeah, this the A plot with Rick and Morty is the engine that makes the B plot run, because the B plot would be nonsensical and weird and wouldn't actually deliver the goods with it not for the A plot. But I don't know, because like, you might be right. It's a pretty straightforward American Idol spoof, but I think it has some of the more clever writing moments, just like drive by, you know, or going to the Pentagon. No, not the lame one on Earth, not the Pentagon. And you know, there's no need for any more snake makery, and just the whole, like, you know, it's trick of the trade, Mr. President. There's a lot of like really good joke writing in this episode.
Sure.
Plus, I'm a huge fan of Dan's Ice-T impersonation that he's busted out in Harmontown, a timer three. Uh-huh. And yeah, and then I also thought the B plot is just really clever. It's an obvious, causal casual link failure. Mm-hmm. And it's something that people can think about and how it applies to their own lives and religions. And it doesn't take itself too seriously. And it's got some really funny concepts with Principal Vagina dealing with heretics and traitors. And I don't know. I'm a sucker for cults. What can I say?
But I think that, to me, makes the B plot stronger. I just appreciated more what they were trying to do with the B plot, because it didn't seem like they were going for much of anything with the A plot other than let's just get swifty.
Yeah. But that was funny, the way the story synchronized, the where, you know, it didn't. I've seen this done in lesser iterations where it felt like time is either moving artificially slow or fast in the one plot just so that the other plots can hit, because it's like, you clearly, you know, it's like, oh, you know, we wanted to tell this story and this is the thing that makes it possible. So they shortchanged the one, whereas this, it really felt like, hey, we want to make a funny American Idol spoof. Also, hey, we want to say something interesting about, you know, people's relationship with religion and faith. Oh, it's like a chocolate and peanut butter situation. But then again, like I said, and one other thing I mentioned in the very first podcast, that like my exposure to shows, one of my friends who came over to house sit did a whole bunch of sketches of these characters on our whiteboard, and it was like two or three of these giant heads with them all saying a big thought bubble in this, show me what you got. And they just assumed that we would get this reference. And Cecil and I get home from vacation, like, what the fuck? And everyone had talked about Rick and Morty, but like that, like the really interesting visual style combined with this bizarre catchphrase, I'm like, fuck it, I've now got to see. So like, there's also a little bit of like, I got a soft spot for the A plot.
Imagine how much more you would love Rick and Morty though if you caught it on like a Rickle in Time or like Rick Close Encounters of the Rick Kind. Like,
yeah, imagine if I got that pure cane sugar instead of the corn syrup.
Your first hit wasn't even that strong, man.
Well, maybe that's why I'm not tweaking on the streets over Rick and Morty. I've settled into just a nice natural high. All right, what do you want to dig into, the B plot masquerading as an A plot, apparently? Or
sure, let's do it. Because I do think there are some funny jokes in there, certainly. I like the general character who seems to be sort of a Dr. Strangelove, George C. Scott.
It's hilarious because I was just, the way I set that up, I thought we were going to talk about the headism.
Well, so I threw confusion all over that.
But yeah, let's talk about the A plot then.
No, that's the B plot in my mind.
Okay, yeah. Okay. Yeah, ostensibly, okay.
Also, President Keith David. Second time in two episodes, Keith David shows up.
And they, you know, this is usually interdimensional portal stuff, but I don't think it's talking out of school to say that it's a bold move to put that distinctive a voice and two disparate characters.
Yeah.
One a reverse draft, one the president of the United States. But it works.
Yeah, he's not even, like, you don't hire Keith David and ask him to do a weird voice, right?
Yeah.
You just say, be Keith David.
Yeah, it's like someone getting Gilbert Godfrey and be like, can you tone down the Gilbert Godfrey?
Right.
Do you have another gear?
Yeah.
No.
Sam Kinison. Like, there are a lot of distinctive voices you don't want to fuck with.
You definitely don't want to fuck with. And I got to say that I'm glad they, because I think that Keith David as the president is now iconic.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine him, you know, he's got such a funny but precise, it's presidential, but like, mm-hmm. A little bit still, it's like, you know, definitely a take on Barack Obama, but just a little bit different enough that you can see him as his entirely own character. He's great.
Yeah, I think he's a little looser than the public image of Barack Obama.
Uh-huh.
He's able to get schwifty every once in a while.
He's like, that's one of my favorite gags is the president. Like, at first you think he's just doing it, but like, it keeps to be more and more subtle as it's just like a passing conversation to get schwifty. He still does it's like an uncontrollable head bob because it's so fucking catchy. It's so fucking catchy. There's also like these drive-by jokes, like, you know, right before we hit a commercial break, Rick's like, this might be a bad time to mention it, but any astronauts you have in orbit are definitely dead. Mm-hmm. Like that, I think, is because it's the shit I would think about. Like, or if you go in the any given week on r/AskScience, there's that. Well, if the Earth disappeared, what would happen to the International Space Station? Or if the sun disappeared,
I mean, it would go flying off into space.
If the sun disappeared, what would happen to the Earth? And you know, there's always like several comments of scientists like that's stupid. Like that literally, like why you're asking a patent science fiction concept and you want a science answer for it? And then there's always the, you know, maybe I don't know, maybe they haven't got past their physics education where they lose their sense of humor. They're like, all right, sure, fine, fuck it.
Yep.
Sun disappears. This is what happens. I think that's fun.
You know what I thought was less fun?
What's that?
Is the whole idea of a intergalactic American Idol, this Planet Music thing. I just thought it's not particularly inspired. It's just sort of like I've seen show do a version of this. Uh-huh. And like, I don't know.
I thought, okay, so I do think there's there's something clever to it because I used to be a fan of American Idol, or at least I was with a person who loved American Idol, so you kind of default to being into it too. And there is something about the early rounds where part of the pleasure that just triggered my social anxiety is watching people who are terrible or oblivious or have bad friends and family get up there and think that they're amazing. And part of it is to watch, like, oh, you just want to watch Simon rip into them. Mm. It's like, you know, how bad is like, and oh, if they're so deluded that even Paula Abdul starts taking shots at him, that's like, ooh. It's like something into these like Q-like giant super advanced beings that are taking like a lesser evolved organism and mocking them and putting them through their paces and destroy like and essentially exploiting them that gets to the core of that you know, like everyone says that, you know, you watch American Idol because you want to see a good singing competition, but then why do they have the garbage up front?
Sure, that appeals to plenty
that's the
of people.
Car that's like, you know, like you go to a car race to see the thrill of speed and all that, but you also some people go to see the fiery wreckage.
Yeah.
And I felt like that was a pretty funny way to take that. It's just essentially, this is Q, this is Ev, this is the Gamesters of Trixtalon, this is every advanced being, and they're just reduced to American Idol. And that's really funny.
Yeah. I guess.
And like, this is their version of like, imagine if like Ryan Seacrest,
I've
like,
seen
a, like a giant though. Ryan Seacrest head just deorbits and sets half the world on fire. That's really fucking funny.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I won't argue that there wasn't funny stuff in it. I just don't think the concept is very interesting.
All right.
And hasn't already been done to death everywhere.
Some of the news coverage, like, these giant heads are causing weather conditions we didn't think were possible for another 8 years. And
right.
Then the others like, that, don't make this political, Gary. I think that's and again, the fucking snake makery. Oh, God, that line slays me. And the idea that Rick just disintegrates people, but he also... You know, that's not as impressive as the mystique of being transformed into a snake, but that's also, you know, like, he could do it. Obviously, Rick could transmute you into a snake.
I would assume so, yeah.
But the gear he'd have to carry to do that. So, like, you just have the snake release and the
that seems
two-step.
Pretty it's... cumbersome.
but that's the thing. Like, imagine the pain in the ass it must be to transform a person into a snake.
Oh, fair, yeah.
Yeah, so
that
it's
contraption.
Like, it's still worth it for the showmanship. And that's why he can get swifty. It's almost like that's the thing. It's like a lot of this stuff gets more and clever the more you think about it. That kind of shows a bit of natural showmanship from Rick, and that's why he can not give a fuck and do a get swifty.
Yeah. I got one pressing question, though.
What's that?
Can the Pope's dick fit through a donut? That's probably my favorite line in the whole
I mean, that's another class of joke that's kind of a trope of its own.
Sure.
But this is by far I don't think I've ever seen one of where the answer is kind of like, I don't even know. And like the way it was it's perfect.
It's
perfect.
It's the does a bear shit in the woods? The answer is obviously yes.
Mm-hmm.
This answer is obviously I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. And then the way they pay that off with the president kind of just barely pulling off the Black Hawk piloting.
Uh-huh.
Pretty good. Pretty good. Do you want to talk about the B plot or the A plot?
Oh, you mean the A plot?
Yes.
This is much better because this has a fair bit to say about religions in general. As someone who does not subscribe to any religion, this is right in my wheelhouse. It's down to like even the funny hats, you know. Maybe it gets a little silly there, but like them wearing the heads as sort of
is it sillier than the Pope's hat?
That's exactly
my
point.
We watched the young pope a couple years ago.
Right. Look at any bishop. Look at any cardinal. Look at any pope. And they all have these ridiculous hats that signify, you know, they're standing in the religion. And
it's all about fancy hats. Like once you get enough power, like kings, queens, emperors.
What else are you going to do with it?
Priests, you know, wise men. You always go the guy that can pull off the craziest hats got the most power because... If he had no power, people would be like, the fuck are you doing? Get that hat off.
Yeah, I feel like America made a fatal decision when it ceded its hat power from the wigs of government to the hats of religion.
Yeah.
I feel like we could have really steered this country in the right direction if we had not given up those wig hats.
Well, but we've given up hats. I think that's the real problem. We've given up hats altogether. So now everyone is the power is judged by your hair. That's just pure genetics. Like, you know,
that's luck of the draw.
You got to have some style and sophistication to pull off a hat. You know, God either gives
that's
you
why
good
I've
hair
never
or he
won
doesn't.
One.
But yeah, now how can we have a cheat code for who we should elect if we don't have the hats to judge them by? How we know to take these people seriously?
I agree.
I mean, look at the situation we're in now. There's no great hats or great hair at the top of this nation.
Nope. One of the other, there's a lot of funny stuff in this section of the episode too. Like when they start sending people to the sky, I really love this part. It's like they've got a thief, they've got
a goth,
and they've got a movie talker. and I thought those were all roughly equivalent. Yeah. Apparently the thief is Justin Roiland.
Yeah.
It's animated to look like him.
One particular configuration of his hair and facial hair.
But the way that comes back around by the end of the episode, and it's now intercutting with the A or B plot, however you look at it, I think is really skillfully done.
Mm-hmm.
In a way that also makes it both... You know, the transparency of how fickle this whole thing is and the interpretation of these signs is so on the face here, but also it's hilarious.
Yeah, the end where like it's just like a marvel of kind of editing and direction where the things are just completely seamlessly blending into, you know, the booing on stage as the first it's a frowny face, it escalates to booing, and then it escalates to cheering when they free the Smiths. It gets faster and more interconnected. It's great.
Principal Vagina is like, you're not allowed to interpret the signs.
Right. Yeah.
Interpret the will of the face gods.
Like I've listened to enough Dan Carlin's hardcore history to know that many a religious war is essentially just that.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck? I'm the guy who's got the connection to God, not you. Oh yeah, well, we're tired of you fucking all of our wives, and we think that God said, and it's
because that connection to God comes with a lot of power.
Yeah, it does.
A lot of influence.
And then it like it leads up and gets faster and faster, more intense, and the stakes continue to build on both sides until the aliens announce that you've won the game show or set up shop, and then it smash cuts back to the neighborhood. It's like, oh, maybe we were getting a little ahead of ourselves. I forget exactly what they said, but
and then Vagina floats by, and
yeah.
And the other thing that it does so well, I think, is on the Summer side of this, where Summer gets wrapped up into this whole cult. As someone who has been through the experience of living, of being in a cult and living with that for my childhood, I felt like this was pretty right on point. Like, you look at Summer and she, you know who Summer is before, right? She's obsessed with her phone. She doesn't have any respect for her parents, probably especially her dad. In this episode, that all turns around when she finds God, finds Jesus, in these head monsters, and she becomes like a model child, right? She's preparing dinner for them. She's saying how much she loves them. She's doing everything right. And Beth and Jerry are starting to consider, maybe this isn't such a bad thing, you know?
Yeah.
We are judging it maybe too harshly if it can have this effect on our daughter.
There's some structure and purpose here that was lacking.
Right.
And
then by
the
end, they flip that around and they say, okay, well, let's follow this and see where it goes. You know, is it going to be beneficial long term to have these beliefs that aren't in actuality true?
Mm-hmm.
No matter how it affects your behavior in the positive. And I think this is weird, like in regards to the parent child relationship, because it seems clear that Beth and Jerry at the end of this had decided, regardless of the good effects that it's having on Summer, we don't want her to be a part of this.
Right. Because
I feel like they maybe should have saved that for when things go really wrong, when Summer starts to like want to send them up on balloons or whatever.
It gives them, but then that would seem self-serving, right? Like, I think the beat there made it seem like they're making a decision based on genuine good parenting and concern for her rather than saving themselves.
But what is the concern there?
Just that, like, I was just like, yeah, this is what we want for Summer, but, like, this doesn't even feel like Summer anymore. And I've seen that, you know, I grew up in the same cult you did, and there's always, like, you know, there's a lot of kids that were just very good and conscientious children. The problem is, you know, eventually you're going to disappoint your parents, and, like, you know, a lot of times the punishment and the chewing out you got was way out of proportion to what you actually did, because the baseline was set for like nearly perfect children behavior, you
know?
Yeah. And it's like that's how you get kids that just go really crazy and hit the skids and go way off and rebel because they're tightly held down. I think that Beth and Jerry are pretty terrible relationally, but they're smart enough to know, like, I feel like they're self-aware as parents, you know? Like, if you get them in bad times, Beth wasn't on a wine bender, and Jerry wasn't in a toxic shame cycle, and they had the kind of, like, foundation. Everything is kind of going good for them. Like, this religion was a good thing for them, right? They're going to be head of marketing, head of medicine, and from that stable platform, they were able to make a good decision for their daughter that then blew up in their face. I gotta say,
I guess so. I'm not quite seeing the downside to any of it until we start to go a little more
off that's
the rails
thing,
with the religion.
As you say, like, Summer is naturally kind of a rebellious, disobedient person, right? And does she got religion now because she understands why she should respect and love her parents, or is this coercion based on being terrified of the new Sky God? Like, I think it's the latter, which is what, you know, Rick and or Beth and Jerry are smart enough to pick up on.
Okay. I'm not sure that changes the equation for me. Like, if a sky god comes down right now, like, the whole reason that I'm an atheist is because I don't see any evidence
and now,
for a god.
Okay, I see what you're saying now. You're saying that, like, in this world, it seemed like a rational act to let your child...
I think so.
...pledge allegiance to
until,
the giant god.
Until the line is crossed. And I'm trying to remember, was the balloon stuff happening before this?
Yeah, you saw, like, it was already, like, you had Thief, which, okay, fair enough. I don't know what kind of trial he had, but then Goth, like...
Right, I mean, clearly you're just ridding yourselves of undesirables.
Right, inappropriate joke teller was one of them. It's like, yeah. I feel like they maybe saw that where this was going, Jonestown.
That makes a lot more sense then, yeah. I couldn't remember the order of events.
Right. I gotta say, Chris Parnell... is a fucking genius at these kind of man baby roles. And one of my favorite lines is when they're about to send them skyward. Summer's like, "Don't worry, Daddy, you'll be sneezed back as a baby." And he's like, "I'm a baby. I'm a baby now." That line reading is so fucking intense and so on point. It's amazing.
Yeah.
And it's like, I used to think when I was just watching the first season or two that this is essentially Cyril Figgis from Archer, but there is a distinct difference into how Cyril melts down and like Jerry melts down. There's like shades of difference between these like pretty kind of passive, milquetoast, nerdy type characters. I fucking loved what he brought to that line.
You gotta see Chris do something other than this character with his voice acting.
Yeah,
I'm sure he has. I just haven't seen it.
I mean, he's a genius on Saturday Night Live. He does all kinds of cool stuff. So it's like that's where I knew him from. So like but animation is kind of like you get in lanes and
his voice gonna get typecast.
Maybe, but he's got a lot more he can bring to that particular table.
He needs like a jingle all the way where he can sort of play like, a little bit of a, I don't know, less scrupulous kind of character.
Yeah, it's interesting though, because like I saw Archer before I saw Bob's Burgers, and I'm like, how could Archer's voice be anything but this like cool, deep voice, suave guy? And then you watch Bob's Burgers, like, oh. So like,
I haven't seen it.
Sometimes it's like I think he could keep the Jerry voice and do something different with the character, and you kind of see that like he definitely butches up when he's like kicking ass with a shotgun, or he's otherwise worked himself up into one of those kind of ultra masculine frenzies. he's an artist.
We didn't talk about Bird Person being back.
Oh Jesus, is that
event.
The B plot?
No, it's kind of the A plot. Morty runs through all these dimensions.
They can't all be A plots, damn it, Jim.
Yeah, I mean, any plot that Bird Person is in is the A plot.
Okay, yeah.
But at least in the microcosm of the plot that he's in.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really really trying to confuse the term here.
It's interesting because Rick does a couple of things that we haven't talked about. Number one, he refuses to ban, like he was going to be destroyed alongside Earth.
Yeah.
And he didn't have to be. I thought that was very interesting.
And Morty is actually the one that suggests, hey,
bailing.
We should abandon this.
Yeah. And there's some there. This point is hammered home by Bird Person when he says, Morty's like, Rick doesn't give a fuck about anything or anyone. And Bird Person says that gives him the power to literally save or destroy planets. And, yes, you can take his portal gun and you can save yourself and your family. But, how often will you think about what could have happened if you put your faith in Rick? But that's wild because, I mean, I guess, and it's telling that this is in a religious episode because that's got to be a religious statement from Birdman. Like, there's definitely a reality where Rick has fucked over Bird Person, right?
Got to be.
So when he says put your faith in Rick, he's talking about like in a sense of a slightly malevolent God that he has the power to save, and that might be. I'm not sure I can wrap my head around his advice or how he sees Rick. Rick saved him and Rick's had this relationship, but also maybe you're supposed to understand that like Rick is actually true blue if you're worth it to him.
Yeah, but in this scenario, I'm trying to think what is worth it what is worth fighting for here if you're Rick? Because if it's just Morty, well, Morty's in the room, you can jump ship.
Yeah.
Take Morty with you. If it's Morty and Summer, go get Summer and jump ship.
Sure.
If it's the whole family, do the same. What is the thing that Rick is defending here?
Yeah, and why, okay, how is this different than Cronenberging the world,
right,
too? And I think that I've gathered from the commentaries is they're kind of happy to let Rick be a little bit dichotomous and mysterious because that gives him room to further explore. So like Bird Person just said, hey, here's the deal about Rick. Here's a formula. You put it on the blackboard and this is how you solve them. He would immediately become less interesting. But since like Bird Person's kind of speaking in almost mythical riddles about Rick, we've got some wiggle room there. Plus, I also really like to see Tammy come back. That's fucking
Bird
hilarious.
Dick.
Yeah. That's and their kind of Dharma and Greg type relationship is really good. I like it. Yeah. I wonder what her parents think. You know, when I was watching this first time, it's like, Jesus.
Yeah, she just goes to a party and then
she's never seen again. 16-year-old maybe.
Yeah, what, Summer, 17?
Yeah, 17-year-old, and she flies off with a midlife Bird Person and is gone for a big stretch of time, it seems like.
Yeah, we don't even know if she communicated with her family after that.
Yeah.
She just bounced and now...
But also because it also builds like the, you know, her kind of like inherent filthiness, because the first time we see her talk, she's like having a small talk about like, I like watching Bukkake. I'm not sure I'd do it, but, you know, it's like, you know, Tammy's got a lot of interior thoughts.
She's a young woman exploring her sexuality
with a bird person. And there's nothing wrong with that. I don't know. I think maybe she should, but what's the legal age on Bird Planet? Does that matter? No, there's no way. There's no talking. You're a dirty bird person. You're a dirty bird.
He ages in bird years, though. He's
That's
really
true.
16.
He just hatched like 6 weeks ago.
Do we talk about Ice-T yet?
What do you want to know about Ice-T?
Because, I don't know. There's a stinger where he turns into water tea. And goes to crunch some numbers.
I mean, I just think that's really that's fun.
Yeah.
And like,
I felt like Ice-T was a little too much like a Frylock. Kind of Aqua Teen. Like, maybe that's what I didn't like about this. It felt a little sillier than most episodes. And
why did you... Okay, so where does the Frylock came from?
I think it's the goatee.
Oh.
I legitimately just think it's the goatee.
Okay.
And
so
being
it's sort of a
torso.
Yeah, okay.
With a big face and a goatee, yeah.
All right. I can see that. I don't know, because like I think the only thing that's funny about it is like Ice-T's kind of a funny guy, because he's got, you know, he's always portrayed as this tough guy, but he's kind of got like a slightly pissy, you know, like a pinch quality, nasal quality to his voice. And it's something that like paradoxically, I think Dan does a really funny impersonation of him. And like that's the whole joke. Like you're either on board with that and the fact that he's actually a molecular being from the planet Alphabetarium. And also I laughed real hard the first time I saw this episode, and like as the world is ending, he just comes flying in and it's like, I care now. You
right.
made me care more, which is super stupid, but how is it any dumber than the Han Solo?
Sure.
Like, yeah. Han Solo had a better line delivery, and he comes flying out of the sun to take out Darth Vader, but it's the exact same thing. Like, I said I don't give a fuck and peaced out, and I felt guilty, and now I'm back because I care more. Nothing
done
changed
that too.
Factually.
Yeah. I mean, Rick's done that in the past, too.
Yeah.
With his family.
I guess that's true. Yeah.
Like, he'll tell Morty, you know what, I don't give a shit, Morty, and he'll portal out of there, and 2 seconds later, he portals back in and saves Morty, right?
Oh, right, with the Morty Night Run.
Yes. I don't know, it was just maybe the Frylock thing, but Ice-T definitely has a sense of humor, like you were saying, because I remember seeing him in Leprechaun 5 in the hood, and that, well, I don't even know if I can call that a sense of humor, because that's a bad movie, but... It's ridiculous.
He's willing to show up and be a professional for large sums of money.
This is true.
And his impression, even more so.
Oh, yeah. You gotta get swifty. You gotta get swifty in here. It's time to get swifty. Uh-oh. You gotta get swifty. Oh, yeah. Take off your pants and your panties. Shit on the floor. Time to get swifty in here.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live. FX is adapting James Clavell's best-selling novel, Shogun, into a 10-part miniseries this spring. Set in the shogunate period of Japan at the turn of the 15th century, Shogun depicts the rise of a feudal lord to Shogun, as seen through the eyes of a shipwrecked English sailor. It's loosely based on the real-life exploits of William Adams and Tokugawa Ieyasu.
Shogun has already been successfully adapted back in 1980 with a widely acclaimed miniseries starring Richard Chamberlain, featuring intricate plots, political scheming, complex characters, and thrilling action. This time, husband and wife team Justin Marks and Rachel Kondo try to recapture the successes of the novel and early adaptations while increasing the levels of historical and cultural accuracy that are often perceived as flaws of this and similar works.
Starring Hiroyuki Sanada from The Last Samurai, Mortal Kombat, and John Wick 4, with Cosmo Jarvis of Peaky Blinders, Raised by Wolves, etc., joining the truly massive cast required to bring this complex world to life. Join Aaron and I each week as we deep dive into each episode, uncovering the mysteries, the intrigue, and the glory of Shogun.
Shogun premieres on FX Hulu Tuesday, February 27th, with a two-part debut. Our podcast will release each Thursday thereafter. Get our Shogun coverage by searching for Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. All right, Jim, are you ready to plot to the future, where we open up a portal to Dimension BM-77 to access behind-the-scenes details, trivia, and spoilers for future episodes? I need your affirmative response to, are you ready? Like this...
Yeah, I'm ready.
We consent to portaling here in this podcast.
Okay.
So
portal me, Daddy.
This seems obvious in retrospect, but it's something I didn't notice when I was watching the episode, is that scene in the church is them essentially trying to write a love letter to The Simpsons. Because it's remarkably similar to the Simpsons layout. Mm-hmm. It's got like the Reverend Lovejoy character up there. Yeah. And they, when they're having that discussion, they talked about how they see kind of like these tripart bumpers that is the Simpsons, Futurama, and South Park.
Sure.
Like these are the ones that always get a little like, oh man, we're getting too close to that. I think we've talked about how we thought that was silly. Like it's like trying to avoid just because something else has done it or that seems like too close to style. Like, why would you limit yourself that way? But it's funny because we were just yesterday talking about like this Rick and Morty podcast, and you were talking about like in editing, you're like, are we sounding too NPR? And mm-hmm. like, isn't that a bumper? Like, you know,
it's more of just like that's not our style kind of thing.
Yeah. So it's like, I don't think it's like it. I guess from the outside looking in, as more, it felt like more of like a fear type of thing. But it's more of like, yeah, I mean, we could do that and it's cool. But it's like that's their way to be cool.
Yeah, I'm cool with it. I haven't seen a ton of Simpsons, so you know, that stuff doesn't stick out as much to me. I've seen a lot more South Park than I have Simpsons.
Mm-hmm. They also talked about how their obvious pleasure at working with Kurtwood Smith, who is Red, the father on the 70s show, also famously got dissolved in acid.
That guy from RoboCop.
Back in the RoboCop days, and then Keith David returning, which I got. Did we talk about this last episode that like it was fun to see Keith David on kind of a very The Thing type of episode, or like a paranoia, you're trying to eliminate the parasite, that's kind of
I don't think we talked about it, but
a
you're
fun
right.
little piece of casting. Well, we got a we got a second shot of Keith David because he's back to back baby.
Oh yeah.
And the other thing that, speaking to your deal with the A and B plot, is I guess they were having a lot of trouble breaking this episode when they realized that what the thing that would make this engine run is separation. Like, once Rick and Morty go off to save the day, their family doesn't see them again till after the day is saved. And like, if Rick was anytime Rick would like call back to like give him an update or something like that, it would just destroy what they're trying to do, because obviously Rick would be like, no, it's not a fucking god, this is a game show, blah blah blah. So I thought that was kind of interesting. Did you notice there's like a 30-second silent gap where they're talking about Ice-T?
I did notice there was a gap.
It seemed like that Dan was there talking about, like, someone reached out and said, hey, Ice-T, Rick and Morty gave you, did an honor to you. And then Ice-T responded, like, this is what happens when animators do a bunch of drugs. And then Dan said it was kind of like a dismissive response. And then there's 30 seconds of silence, and then they come back talking, still talking about Ice-T. And I wonder if, like, Dan was talked about like a potential dust up that he had with Ice-T over a misunderstanding, and they're just like, you know what?
Could be.
Let's let sleeping Ice-T's lie and just delete that. Or maybe it came, like, I could see it also, like, maybe it came off weird. And here,
yeah,
you're welcome. I'm shining a giant spotlight on this, but that's my commentary conspiracy theory.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out how that lines up with the Christina Hendricks story he told a couple episodes prior to this.
Uh-huh.
Because I felt like that was really awkward and a little weird.
Yeah, but it might not
and something that probably would have got cut first if they were going to cut anything.
It might not, but would it threaten to reignite
the
East Coast, West
beef,
Coast war?
You don't want beef with Ice-T.
No. Isn't Ice-T East Coast, or is he a West Coast guy?
I think
Dan's
West.
Definitely West Coast.
I thought he was West, but
West Coast Civil War? Well,
man,
that's why they had to delete it.
I know so little about 90s hip-hop.
You can't have MCs of that caliber beefing.
Yeah.
The president himself called in and said, remove those 30 seconds.
I don't want either of them to get shot. I like both of them.
I don't want anyone to get shot, to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
You know, one thing I thought was interesting about this episode, and it might explain kind of like the A-plot of being a hook around American Idol, is it seemed like that these three songs, Getting Swifty and Head Bent Over, and the other song that they were singing on the way to, where were they going?
I don't even remember the other song.
It was something that Rick and Morty and Summer were singing as they were bouncing through clouds and stuff. Anyway, that they had these episodes that they recorded for this kind of like video game, or very simple video game called like Rick and Morty's Totally, what was it? It's a totally cheap click through adventure game or something.
Okay.
And there's an item like Summer's iPod that had these, you know, original songs that Justin just got in the booth and improvised completely to like these off the shelf beats. And he liked how they turned out enough that they were always looking for a way to like get these into an episode, and they thought that the American Idol hook would be a good way to do that. But he pointed out that he was not really doing a Rick or Morty impression for these lyrics. He's doing just kind of like, oh, this is a generic, you know, rapper dude or whatever. And you can kind of tell, like, when Morty's doing his, like, you know, hook drops, like, oh yeah, it doesn't really sound like Morty. I mean, it does.
It just sounds like Justin. Yeah.
Sounds like Justin doing a weird, funny voice. But you could also say that, like, oh, well, that's Rick doing, like, what does Rick sound like when he's dropping bars?
Yeah. There are plenty of singers who sound very different from their speaking voices.
Yeah. And I never, ever, ever noticed that until I heard that. And, you know, it's especially noticeable with the Morty stuff. But it also kind of works because, you know, people have different singing voices.
And I looked it up. If you want to check it out, it's called Rick and Morty's Rushed Licensed Adventure.
There you go. So. There's a couple, like, they actually made Jerry's Game, I believe, where it's just clicking on balloons and getting score for nothing.
Right, they did that. Pocket Mortys. You were obsessed with.
Pocket Mortys is actually a fucking fun Pokemon clone.
Uh-huh.
It's and I never played Pokemon. I was a little bit too old for it. And it got a hit right in a time where I'd gotten a new phone, and I was looking for a mobile game, and I played the shit out of that thing. So yeah, it's definitely not the rushed licensed version of the game. It's the keeper.
Pickle Me This is distributed by Bald Move in association with Starburns Audio. It's produced by Jason Smith and Scott Porch from Starburns, and myself, Ben Aaron from Bald Move. All music featured on this podcast is from the Rick and Morty soundtrack, available from Sub Pop Records. Please subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. To discover the many other great shows we do, please check out baldmove.com and starburns.audio. If you appreciate what we do and want to directly support us, consider joining our club at club.baldmove.com to get access to exclusive bonus audio and video features. Finally, you can follow us on your favorite social media at baldmove. See you next time.
All right, Jim.
Jim. All right, Jim. What you think?
All right, Jim. What'd you think this here episode getting swifty?